Hi there, welcome to another Osler podcast. My name's Todd Fraser and this podcast features conversations with some of the world's leading healthcare experts, opinion leaders, characters and change agents. Today it's my pleasure to chat to a friend and colleague, Mr. Dave Ellerby. Dave is a senior paramedic on the Sunshine Coast of Australia, and Dave and I have known each other for a number of years, having worked previously together on the local helicopter retrieval service. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much.
So why did you go into paramedicine?
I went into paramedicine because I suppose I cared about people. I wanted to help people. I was in the army at that stage, had enough of fixing aircraft, and it just seemed a natural thing for me to do. So I got into it 30 years ago before we had some significant changes in ambulance, things like critical care paramedics and things like that. So I suppose that is the chief thing, wanting to help people and having the ability, I think, to solve problems and fix problems, which is essentially what medical pre-hospital care is.
So how did you find yourself going down that critical care pathway? Like, how long did it take you before you started to explore that?
I suppose I started to explore it pretty well straight away when I got into ambulance. We had just had coronary care starting, which was manual defibrillation, you know, with the old big defibrillators with the paddles and things that you see on old movies. So I just tried to, every time something new came into ambulance, I attempted to do that, which was quite successful back at that time. Young, very enthusiastic. Did manual coronary care. Every time a new course happened, whether it be cannulation or that sort of thing, I did it. It was called the paramedic course back then, started, which is now our critical care paramedic program. Started and I managed to get on the second one in Queensland. So it was very new for ambulance. At that stage, ambulance officers did not cannulate. We had no opioid analgesia. We didn't have pre-hospital resuscitation drugs. We had no pre-hospital advanced airways. So it was very new and it was challenging. We got a lot of criticism from a lot of doctors in hospital who thought those procedures could only be done by doctors, but then we got a lot of support from other doctors as well.
Right.
Chiefly, actually, they were intensivists who assisted us with that, and they were great allies for us, but they were very good critics as well. So they put us through the ringer, which I think made us a lot better. They challenged us a lot in our thinking.
Yeah. So how has that role evolved over that period?
Look, it has evolved with regards to medication we use pre-hospitally, some of the procedures that we do pre-hospitally, but I think it's evolved with regards to the way a critical care paramedic is a mentor pre-hospitally for other paramedics,
right,
as well.
Yeah.
You know, we have critical care paramedics in ambulances as crews. We have them in pods. Essentially, that's how they run in the critical care mode, and we have them on aircraft as well. But they're usually people that are at the peak of their game with regards to ambulance and pre-hospital care, and they provide experience and mentoring to ambulance crews. I'd say more than 50% of the times when a critical care paramedic attends to a pre-hospital case, it is not to do a specific procedure but to back up a crew, an advanced care crew, and just provide them with support in decision-making process and experience.
Yep.
So,
what are the? I mean, you've obviously done it quite a while now. What sort of? What have you got out of that role? What do you enjoy about it?
I really do enjoy now the mentoring role. So I'm a clinical support officer. So mentoring young paramedics,
yeah.
They come out and so when I started, I needed a license, a driver's license and a first aid certificate. Our paramedics come out of uni now with a degree, so it's a significant difference. And I've had to keep up doing all that study all the way through because I thought, I need to keep up with these young dudes. But I think we bring experience to the table, and it's about being a more settled clinician and a clinician that's able to think through problems, just take a little step back for a minute and think through a problem rather than rush in and make rash decisions pre-hospitally.
Yeah.
And using that decision basis to do it.
What do you find are the challenges in that role?
The challenges are a lot of our young paramedics don't particularly want to listen to experience. They've got a degree and they think, oh, that's, yeah, I've got all of the necessary characteristics. But quite often, once they start doing the job, they realise, oh, I need to build some experience for a while. And some of them are very open to listening. You know, it's just not stuff you can pick up in uni. It's a very practical job. And when I started, there were a lot of tradesmen that came in, motor mechanics, radio technicians, that's what I was. People who had problem-solving abilities, and you give them the tools and then they go away and solve the problem, which is essentially what clinicians do pre-hospital. Yeah. Yeah.
What sort of character attributes do you think make of most valuable for that type of role? Like, what do you think are your strengths in that sense?
I think the ability to communicate well.
Yeah.
The industry has changed a little bit where we are nowhere near as critical on paramedics and their performance, I believe, as in like face-to-face critical. Our critical care paramedic program has changed. I suppose you could use that word, you know, bastardising sort of thing, as what happened in those initial five or more paramedic courses. So it was very critical and you had to be quite tough to get through that. Now I think the role is a lot more supportive and really good communication skills. And having the ability to support people in a positive way rather than a negative way is important.
Yeah. The ability for a junior person to become a more senior person has a lot more structure in other parts of healthcare, like in medicine, for example, where there's specialty training pathways and so on. How does that apply in paramedicine? Are there pathways that people can explore?
They probably are. Look, early in my career, I spent time looking to paramedics for mentorship.
Yeah.
But I think one of the greatest things that the critical care paramedic course gave me was I was no longer looking at paramedics. I was looking at intensivists, anaesthetists, and emergency physicians, and which is what I still do today.
Yep.
Like I said, you know, we had a few. Oh, well, I had a few particular intensivists who I bounced jobs off a lot. A lot of my patients ended up in their units, and they really were good with regards to mentoring.
Yep.
And I think that is an important way. You need to look outside yourself, and maybe you need to look outside your specific role of care to get mentoring as well. And I don't think our industry does it very well. I think it's important for paramedics to have personal mentors, so clinicians that are regular, they go to, and that they get on well with, you know, characteristic and personality wise, but then who can provide them with that mentoring capability. And something, you know, I want to mention is, like, at the moment we've got a young paramedic doing the critical care course right at the moment, and while that person probably can learn quite a bit from somebody with my experience, I actually learn quite a bit from him in the new way he's learning, some of the things he's learning, and some of the more contemporary practices that we tend not to be able to pick up as easily as they do.
It's interesting, isn't it? The further north in your career you get, the more you realise that there's just as much benefit for a mentor as there is for the mentee.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So you mentioned some of the medical specialties that you would bounce ideas off. So that's very interesting from a clinical perspective. But what else would you use a mentor for, particularly one who's in the industry such as yourself?
Often when you're getting critiques from outside what we do, you know, that can be quite crushing to some paramedics. I think we still, you know, obviously we still sit under the emergency setting, as in like hospital-based.
Mm.
So often it is about just running cases past them to get more information, I suppose, and just to ensure that you're doing things appropriately. As you know, all care is not black and white. And it's those shades of grey that I think sometimes you need to investigate with a mentor.
pre-hospital care can be a very, very confronting environment. There's a lot of emotional stressors, yep. There's potential for physical abuse and so on. Mm. How does ambulance go about supporting particularly junior people as they start to deal with those issues?
Look, I mean, we've got what's called a Priority One system, which is a very good system where people who've done some extra training in, I suppose, what is it, psychological care and stuff like that, who are dotted around the stations, keep an eye on people. They're aware of the triggers and things like that, and they can then pick up on those, have discussions with paramedics. But then we've got a referral system where we can speak to psychologists, obviously free of charge, and our family can as well, to be investigating some of those issues.
Yeah. The industry's obviously evolved quite a lot,
yep.
in the time that you've been in it. One major example of that is, as you referred to earlier, that it's now a graduate degree.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel that that has influenced the industry?
Oh, look, I think it's influenced in a big way in the fact the background knowledge and, you know, that theoretical and clinical knowledge we never, ever had back then. We used to have to dig deeper and find out some of that stuff. And, in fact, I suppose in our early training, we were actually hoodwinked about some clinical conditions that we then thought, oh, hang on, that's actually not right. You know, we were, I suppose, for want of a better word, dumbed down a bit just to do these procedures pre-hospital. But after a while, when you're really starting to get into it and when you're using medical officers and intensivists and anaesthetists and you're having discussions, robust clinical discussions with them, you really realise some greater depth of knowledge that's required.
Yeah.
So I think that's really significant. I think registration now has not changed much for our industry, but changed a lot about who we are as professionals. And I think I'm already seeing in my role as a clinical support officer, seeing some of the changes with regards to that. We need to step up to the plate a lot more as professionals, health professionals. And I think we need to move on a bit more from just being somebody who turns up the work and is fed by an organisation the knowledge that we need. We need to now be going outside our organisation and even our profession somewhat and getting in a lot more information. It's something that critical care paramedics have done very differently to advanced care paramedics over the years. I think it's probably time for advanced care paramedics to start moving towards that, definitely, and registration will do that.
Are you anticipating that that will change the emphasis from employer-provided education to self-directed education?
Yeah, look, I think it will do a lot. We will still, at this stage, I'm quite sure Queensland Ambulance will still be providing some employer-directed education because our procedures and our scope of practice is constantly changing. And there are areas that we see where maybe we may not be doing as well. And, you know, those are brought to us through clinical auditing processes, through the coroner, through the Office of the Health Ombudsman, all of those areas. And then consequently we put education practices into place and sessions to address that. And I think paramedics need to start looking at our role's changed. We don't do as much emergency work as we used to. We're more a entry pathway to health for a lot of people in our society. So we need to be developing areas in that, and we need to be looking outside of ambulance to gain some of those skills.
Yeah. What sort of CPD activities resonate with you personally? Because everyone's different, aren't they?
Yeah.
What do you enjoy?
I enjoy reflecting on cases that we do.
Yep.
Whether that be high acuity or low acuity for that matter. So I enjoy those. I enjoy listening to, you know, clinical podcasts and stuff like that. And look, I just like reading research. Often that research doesn't change the way you go about your business as a paramedic, but it actually brings, you know, a lot more knowledge into the background of it.
Yep. So your current role as CSO or yep. clinical support officer, what does that entail?
So we have a reasonable sized role. For a start, we're a clinician that responds. You know, we're logged on into some ambulances regularly and we do that. But we do what's called infield coaching. So we have the ability to be placed onto a case and we just go and we have a chat with the crews. We watch their assessment. We discuss The clinical histories presenting and things like that. We then go to the hospital, we listen to their handovers, and we discuss how they went. It is a positive, and it has changed significantly. It used to be an audit process, but I think it has changed, particularly over the last 3 or 4 years, to a positive process where people are coming out and proactively assisting on-road paramedics to do their job and help them improve. In particular for us, we need to really be looking at the way we document our cases. I think we have failed to do that as professionals, and we need to be looking to the medical profession to see how they document that and take that on board specifically. So it's probably one of the key areas we're looking at the moment.
Yep. So one of the issues that I'm quite passionate about is burnout, and I think that's very common in all areas of healthcare, and we see almost a bleeding of professionals out of our primary industries, and I understand that paramedicine is no exception to that.
No, look, I think you're right. I've been in the profession for 30 years now, and I keep in contact with various clinicians of my same vintage throughout the state, and one of the things that is high in our personal discussions is burnout, whether it be because of fatigue and shift work or whether it be because some of the work they've done, particularly ones that have been doing high acuity stuff, the guys that are on the helicopter and stuff like that, and doing critical care stuff. So it is significant, and I think it's about reinventing yourself by using all of that clinical experience that you have.
Yeah. What are the factors do you think that are most important here? Is it fatigue and hours, or is it conditions, or is it a stressful job that just lends itself to people finally having enough?
Look, I think it's a mixture. I'd be interested to see if we still have people in 30 years' time that have been in the service 30 years.
Mm.
I think the industry has changed and become a lot more stressful. Our workload has increased significantly. And our time in front of a patient each shift has, I would assume, more than doubled in the years that I've been working, definitely. So some of that is managing fatigue. I don't know whether we do that by the length of shifts, by ensuring that we can have regular breaks in shifts, whether we reduce shift, night or afternoon shifts, or how we do that. I know there are services who look at the age of an officer and how long they've been in the service, and then put them or give them the option to go into shift work that is less demanding with regards to that as you're getting older, so they still keep that experienced person. But I think for me, becoming a clinical support officer has been about that reinventing myself. I've struggled with that quite a bit because I like being, in front of patients and assessing and treating patients. That's what I love, and it's why I got into the service, and I haven't really changed from that. For me, being a paramedic has not really been a job. It's just been something I enjoy doing, and doing it daily. But I think you're right, it is becoming more and more difficult. So I think as you get older, it's about grabbing that experience that you have and you've developed and recreating it into something that's worthwhile, that's still providing care to patients, maybe not always face-to-face.
And as you say, sometimes non-traditional ways of applying your skills is quite relevant. And that's one area that I'm very interested in. And you've had some experience in that with some work you've been doing in Vanuatu. Can you tell us about that?
Definitely. So about 5 years ago, I had been doing some building work with a Christian organisation I was with. In Vanuatu, we were helping build schools and stuff like that. But more and more when I was over there, I was realising that a lot of their health care is very basic, and people were dying from very basic things. So a group of us ended up starting a medical clinic, and it is in essence a GP's clinic, but has an emergency side to it. So Vanuatu, 2.5 hours, I suppose, west of the eastern seaboard of Australia, and the healthcare there is significantly less, and there's no CT scanner in the country. Basic blood, taking blood tests for basic things is often non-existent. So we set up a clinic close to the second biggest hospital in the country, and we did it for a specific reason there. Obviously, it's the second biggest populous area in Santo, and So we provide essentially a GP clinic there that also is available 24 hours a day as emergency care. A lot of expats and ni Vanuatu who could afford it would fly to Australia to get health care. Because of the difficulties with the Vanuatu Ministry of Health and how they operate in a remote area, you know, getting medications out to small islands, they have a lot of struggles. And you know, even just the amount of money that they've got available as a small country to provide healthcare. They don't have a taxation system like Australia does, so they can't just suck tax to do that. So that medical centre, it's called, is a medical organisation, is based mainly with volunteers. So it's doctors, paramedics, nurses, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, a wide variety of people. And it's, we don't take people only because of what they do. We take people and just, oh, they've got gifts that we can use. And it may only be for short time that we have them there. You know, we had a facomaxillary surgeon come from Europe to spend several weeks there, which is a skill that Vanuatu very rarely sees except when organisations volunteer that ability. And that person was kept very busy, you know, working with people of the public. So, as I said, you know, that organisation. So for me, it was set up as a GP clinic or a primary healthcare clinic, and we now employ some nurses there who are specialists in that area, nurse practitioners who've done work around the world, but have had a, you know, a Western medical background. And we have doctors and nurses and paramedics and that come for short periods of time, anywhere between 2 weeks and 6 months, and assist in that area. So they work in your clinic, plus they go up into the hospital and they do some mentoring. And they actually, you know, assist up there. You know, there are various reasons why people in Vanuatu who could be a clinician disappear out of their hospital. They may have had a death in their community and they go back home to their normal island. They can be gone for a month, so it leaves a month hole in their medical system and they don't have the resources to backfill like we do. So we do things like that. We evacuate a lot of tourists and expats who, like I said, used to fly to Australia for medical care and then go fly back over to Vanuatu, where we fill that gap a bit as well. So I've sort of, my specialist area is obviously not the primary healthcare. We've got advice from clinicians who specialise in that, but setting up like a small emergency room there where we can do a lot of things like back slabs, suturing, and we get a huge variety of very interesting cases that come into that environment that a lot of even emergency registrars or physicians in Australia can be quite confronting because they don't have the ability just to pop somebody through a CT scanner. You know, we do have an ultrasound in our clinic. There's plain film x-rays up at the hospital that we can get done. But apart from that, you're really relying on a good history of the incident, a good patient history of their medications and previous medical issues and things like that to make a diagnosis. So it is, I suppose, old-time medicine.
What sort of skills did you take from your work life in Australia and have made that possible? Like, what do you bring to that?
So I think a lot of pre-hospital care. So so essentially what a paramedic does. But things like organisational abilities, how to set up, you know, I've been into a lot, you know, as a flight paramedic, I've been into a lot of small ED departments throughout southeast Queensland. Mm-hmm. You fly out and retrieve a patient, bring them back. So just how they have them set up, some of the things that you think their needs and uses were, but also it's stepping back to the basics. I think Australians have no idea how good their healthcare system is. Yeah. Until you go to a place like Vanuatu. And I know a lot of our clinicians that go there and volunteer for us come back with a significantly different idea to our healthcare system in Australia. And we take a lot for granted.
Very normalising experience.
It is an extremely normalising experience, very much. And we, you know, we've had to provide counselling for some of those clinicians because of the difficulties they've faced. Yeah. And, you know, you have to make different end-of-life decisions on patients there. Yeah. Somebody who's got a traumatic head injury that comes off the back of a ute over there, sedating them, intubating them, ventilating them, when there is no ICU in the country to send them to. So making a very different choice. People with, you know, terminal illnesses, the life decisions are very different to what you would do in Australia.
Yeah, I can imagine. This podcast has largely been about career development and so on. We've got a nice big microphone here. If you were talking to graduates who are coming out now, what sort of advice would you give them about their career development and how they look at the next 30 years of their career?
Probably the biggest advice is to look outside of ambulance. I think variety is something that really invigorates you and keeps you interested in patient care. So looking at variety, so like I worked for RFDS doing military evacuations and stuff like that. I've worked, you know, in Vanuatu and even in ambulance, I've moved around doing deployment supervising in our operations room, doing aeromedical work, working in small country towns. I think it's about variety, but look outside. One of the things I believe registration will bring to paramedicine is that a greater scope of practice will come up outside of ambulance services. So that may even be working in a doctor's surgery which is extended hours, doing, you know, assessments on emergency cases and things like that. So all of that sort of stuff. And looking at operating not just in the scope of practice that you're in the ambulance service, but look for opportunities where you can increase that scope of practice. An organisation I work for, you know, I've learned suturing and things like that. Well, I don't apply that to ambulance, but definitely some of the things that I've learned doing in there have translated back into ambulance care. And look outside just ambulance. So again, working on a helicopter, you know, doing inner facility retrievals, ICU retrievals, has definitely translated into the way I care pre-hospitally for acutely injured patients. So, yeah.
Dave, thanks very much for your time. It's been great to talk to you about this.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the OSLA podcasts. For more episodes, check out our websites at osla.force.com.